Hello, my name is Sam. This is a series best listened to from the beginning. If you have and you're still here, last episode we left off with the village in the middle of festival preparation and a bit of intrigue that the boy discovered. Please enjoy The Scribblin' Man.
The boy inched his way around the boulder, away from the side the chief's son was walking past, to remain undetected and, most importantly, alive.
After enough time had passed, the boy made sure he could not see the eldest son anymore. Only then did he make his own way back. Before leaving, he decided to check the spot of the conversation. There in the dirt were crude drawings. After a moment of contemplation, they appeared to be a rough outline of the village, with lines drawn into it from the direction he was in now. Horror dawned in his boyhood mind at the great tragedy about to take place if he didn't alert someone. He dashed back to the village and tried to ferret out the chief amid all of the hustle and bustle of preparations for the next day's festival. The chief was nowhere to be found. The village was in mid-transformation, and no one was paying the boy any mind, since they all had major tasks to complete before full darkness. The biggest change so far was the ground in the center of the village. It had been completely covered in the reeds and grasses gathered by the children. A strong hand grabbed his arm and jerked him back. "Whoa there, little one. Be careful of where you tread." The boy squeaked in terror when he realized it was the chief's eldest son, with what seemed like a knowing glint in his eye. Too stunned to speak, his mouth opened and closed, silently trying to work the moisture back so he could scream, "Traitor!" But nothing came out. "Spider bit your tongue, eh?" the eldest son asked. "No matter. Just be wary of the pit I dug." He gave the boy's arm one final gentle brotherly squeeze and let him go. Later that night, the boy found the chief snoozing under the tallest tree. Afraid to wake him, the boy sat down next to him for warmth until he was asked to speak. "Still worried about your visions?" the chief mumbled, with his eyes still closed. "I saw something today that tells me it was no vision." "So you have?" the chief inquired. "Yes, your eldest met again with a warrior from our neighbors, and I saw the plans they drew in the dirt. They planned to attack us during the festival."
"So you say?"
"Yes, I would not lie to you." "Do you not trust your chief and men to protect you?" "Of course I do. I just wanted to do my part in any way I can. I love my village, and I will have no harm come to it if I can help it."
"That is a noble boy indeed. Your heart will serve you well. This convinces me you are ready for this task and will not flinch with fear when the time comes." With that, the chief drew out a brilliant fan of bird feathers, white on one side and black on the other. The boy gulped nervously. "You must, at some sacrifice, leave our festival early."
"But..."
the chief quieted the boy by holding up his hand. "You will take this fan and climb the tallest tree. You will keep the white side hidden against your body until you see the first neighboring warrior approach over the plain. You will then wave it, white side toward the village, until you see my return signal. You will then climb down and run to your mother's hut to hide with her and your sister. You must trust me on this and do exactly as I say. It is perhaps the most important task in our defense." With solemn pride, the boy took the feather fan from the chief, who nodded with a smile and patted the boy on the head. "You're a good one and smart. I hope you are smart enough to mention this to no one."
"Of course," the boy stated firmly.
His mind raced until he finally fell asleep late in the night, with the smell of the fan in his nostrils and the gentle feather caressing his cheek. Dawn blazed gloriously red, and the excitement in the village was palpable. Women singing, drums banging, flutes playing, and the salivating smell of roasted gazelle permeated through every hut to the delight of all the tribe's senses. Mindful of his task, the boy enjoyed the early festival while he could and ate his fill. Everyone was having the time of their lives as the chief serenely smiled upon his village atop a small stage where he and his wives sat. This day, there was always music in the air and laughter. The games and sports were played in the light of day. Boulder and long spear tossing for distance, short spear and sling tossing for accuracy, a game called Pushaman, where two combatants tried to push the other out of the circle with their shields. Then they played a team version of Pushaman. Timed perfectly by the women, the roasted gazelle and sweet fruit feast signaled the end of the big showdown between the young men and old. When it was agreed that the two teams were locked in a stalemate, the call to dinner came. The young men all at once broke their hold, and the old men barreled them out of the circle, claiming victory, whooping and hollering their success over the young men with no shortage of praise for their own cleverness and patience. It became a legend in tribal lore. Any animosity stirred up by this incident was quickly banished as the juicy, tender meat soaked in fruit juice made its way into the stomachs of the villagers. The feast and dwindling sunlight were lasting longer than the boy could bear, while the thought of climbing the tree at sunset hung over him. But as it always does, sunset eventually arrived, and the boy took his signaling feathers and ascended to the top of the tree. The boy could still easily hear the singing and music, the chanting and clapping, but his eyes were trained on the plain, and he could not see the dancing. Luckily for him, the moon was full and gave him an excellent view. During what seemed to be the climax of the storyteller's second yarn, the boy saw a formation of dark figures running through the tall grass toward his village. Staring another moment to be sure, he saw the glint of war paint on the head of the lead warrior. He began signaling the chief. For the briefest moment, he was at a loss as to what kind of signal to give. Then his dream of a giant bird flooded his mind, and he mimicked what he saw the bird do. In the enormous light of the bonfire, he could see the chief's posture and attitude change. Signal received. The chief interrupted the story to bark a few orders. The women all ran to their huts, and the men, young and old, grabbed their shields and spears. They then hid in shadows between the huts and boulders, ready to pounce like cats on unsuspecting prey. All the while, the musicians kept playing drums and flutes as they inched to the far side of the chief's stage. The coordinated movements executed by his fellow villagers mesmerized the boy, and he realized only too late that he had missed his opportunity to seek refuge in the hut with his mother and sister. He looked down and saw the sleek warriors sliding shadow-like through the grass at the base of his tree. They were completely unaware of his presence above them. He held his breath and stayed as still as the tree itself until he could see all their backs and dared one last signal flash to his chief. The invading warriors attacked in the exact formation laid out by the chief's eldest son, and the disparate parts of the chief's plan began falling into place. The boy could only marvel gape-mouthed at the endless cleverness. The first line of attackers fell into the reed-hidden pit. The village men then played the fastest and fiercest game of pushaman with their shields. Young and old unleashed blood-curdling screams as they enclosed upon the hapless and terrified invaders until the wedge of shields forced all but one into the pit, where they were brained, stabbed, crushed, or suffocated until there was not one whimper. Hypnotized by the exquisite choreography, the boy failed to notice the one struggling straggler who squeezed frantically between the feet and ankles of the tribesmen. Attracted by the boy's hoots and hollers of encouragement, the lone remaining invader darted for the tree. He was halfway up before the boy realized it and saw the moonlight reflecting the furious murder in his eyes. His vision burned into the boy's soul, which would haunt his nightmares until the end of his days. The boy screamed in panic, his prepubescent voice cutting through the night like the cry of a great raptor. The first to turn and spot the last attacker was the chief's eldest son. He let his short spear fly from his atlatl so hard and fast the spear pinned the warrior to the tree. It was many cycles of the moon before the bugs and vultures were able to erase the last remnants of the corpse. Despite the weeks of worry and doubt, the look of triumph and deadly aim possessed by the chief's eldest in that singular moment were the key influences in the boy's decision to forgive and forget. It then occurred to the boy, as an aspect of his relief, that the eldest son's deceit and sneaking were all part of the plan. And what is more, the chief's son showed the most bravery in meeting and tricking the neighboring tribe, knowing full well at any time he could be killed. With this, he could finally accept the chief's eldest son as the only adequate quarter of his sister, and did everything he could in the coming months to allow them some time together to wrestle and make animal sounds. The next festival was a celebration of the marriage between his sister and the chief's eldest. The revelry and cooking was grander than ever, since the chief had invited the women and children left behind by the men of the neighboring tribe to join their village. There were a few bitter widows, but the majority of the women took themselves and their children into the protection of the very clever and charismatic chief. Some of those embittered became plains witches, but the rest slowly trickled back into the growing village to seek companionship, shelter, and food. The village had never seen a chief smile more than during that first great moon cycle when many of the newcomers became his new wives. The boy was given the seat of honor at this festival for his role and sacrifice from the previous. He was a year older and more appreciative of the young women's dancing, but he couldn't ignore his secret desire to see once more the amazing tableau he viewed from his perch in the tree when he helped save the village. Color me astonished. How had so much of a story issued forth from the man while I was getting and finishing some coffee? I obsessed the night away imagining the possibilities of devising an ethical experiment to test whether or not this was a one-shot thing.
Written, edited, and produced by Sam Lett. Narrated by Sky Wagoner.